expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course for the next 2 hours they're going to be the views of John Quirk. And John has spent much of his life working in the intelligence agencies. He's retired now, and he has a business of his own, but he travels a great deal. He's only recently come back from the Near East and the Middle East, and we're going to be talking, well, really, we're going to be talking for the first hour about secret societies, and the second hour about the coming war with Iran, which John feels very deeply is only a matter of time. And, of course, the problem is that we do not know how the war is going to end. When you start a war, you would never know how that war is going to end. Well, under any circumstances, John, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Good evening, Stan. It's a pleasure as always.
Well, let's get it started. Let's open, perhaps, with a discussion of secret societies, because I think it's so important for people to understand that there are secret and semi-secret and covert organizations out there that that work behind the scenes, really manipulating so much of what goes on. And to the average individual, when you talk about these covert organizations, they sort of equate them with black helicopters or people who believe in little green men from the other planets. But these really are a reality. These are very, very powerful men. Many times you have an agenda, and it seems that many of them have a common agenda, no matter which organization, and that is this idea of this world government, which is the major driving force behind the belief system of so many people. And you can't be loyal to an America, to a world government, and still want to preserve America as a sovereign state. So, John, why don't you pick up the story there, and we'll go on from there.
Well, it's an interesting topic. I've been involved with it a long time. In my course where I teach intelligence and national security, and then I teach another course over at the French Diplomatic and Military Academy, I usually teach a course on the world's intelligence services, like the structure of the CIA, the KGB, the British intelligence, MI5, MI6, the French intelligence services, the Arab intelligence services. And usually the topic comes up, what about the influence of secret societies within intelligence, or does intelligence services, do they monitor them? And, of course, we go back hundreds of years to, secret societies like the Illuminati, the Freemasons, the Knights of Malta, and then the current secret societies. Bill Colby, who wrote a couple introductions to my books and was a great friend when he was at CIA, told me, John, there's only one real secret society, that's Skull and Bones from Yale. And, of course, we know George Bush belongs to it, his father belongs to it, John Kerry, and I think there's about 660 living members. Actually, you can go on the Internet now and type in Skull and Bones, and there's two or three people that have made a comprehensive list. They, it is my understanding, and from what I know of them, and people only know a few basic things if you start reading it. There's only been two books written about them, one Anthony Sutton and another, a young gal from Yale wrote one.
Alexandra Robbins, right.
With all the similar things in it. And they basically see America as an idea, not as a country. And then we can come back to them in a minute. You've got a lot of other ones. You've got the Freemasons, both in the United States and overseas. You've got
John, I'm going to interrupt you right there. We're going to have to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a moment with John Quirk, who, of course, has worked with intelligence, as he has known the leaders of our intelligence agencies for many years. Go right ahead, John.
Well, there's a lot of different secret societies. What's interesting lately is that a lot of these societies, some are really secret. They're not all conspiratorial. They're not all sinister. But as you pointed out, they all have an agenda. The agenda of Skull and Bones is basically to enrich themselves and use democracy and capitalism to do it. It goes back to the 1840s and started at Yale. You have religious secret societies like Opus Dei, the Catholic Conservative Society, that is growing by leaps and bounds. About 80% of all the law school students at Catholic University are Opus Dei. They just built a multi-million dollar building in New York. And most of their goals are secret, except most people know that they really want to take over the Catholic Church. And then you have a lot of semi-secret societies, like the Bohemian Club out in California, the Freemasons, which go back hundreds of years. They're very powerful. Every president in the United States has been a Mason, except John Kennedy, who was Catholic. And then you have a lot of other ones. You have the Seraphists, who are female government employees. You have Wolf's Head at Yale, which is mainly a fraternity, but they claim that they do things for Skull and Bones. And then these are basically what I would call, the ones I just rattled off are American ones. And what's happening lately is there seems to be a unity of purpose with all of them, including the Council for Foreign Relations, which is not so much secret, but has tremendous influence on our policy making. They're globalists, they're elitists, they are not afraid of giving up America's sovereignty to make this whole one world thing work, which I disagree with, and a lot of other people disagree with, but they have an agenda, and it seems that all of these groups today are kind of forming ranks against Islamic fundamentalism. So you have Skull and Bones, which is really an economic organization with some political power. You have the Council of Foreign Relations, which is all political and economic. Almost every president has been a member of the CFR, every Secretary of State, every National Security Director, leading ambassadors, and so on. And I wouldn't say that they are left-wing. They're really, or right-wing, they're really middle-of-the-road globalist.
Hold that thought. We'll be right. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, John has talked about many of the secret societies, such as the Opus Dei Society, the secret Catholic organization, which has a growing influence within the Catholic Church and seems dominant on intent upon dominating the Catholic Church. And certainly, of course, it was referring to the Masons today. But Skull and Bones, he said that so many of these organizations seem to have one common goal today, and that seems to be uniting against Islam. And, of course, then talking certainly about the Council on Foreign Relations, which certainly always provides our Secretary of State, our leading ambassadors, the head of the CIA. Key people in government literally always come from the CFR. Doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. They seem to be the dominant force in our government today. And so pick up the story there, John.
Well, what's happening today, I think there's two major themes happening, and secret societies are part of it. The one theme is, of course, how do we defend ourselves against the rise of Islamic fundamentalism? Now, you have the Knights of Malta, which is a Catholic secret society. They do things mainly for the Pope. They do charitable works. It goes back 800 years to the Crusades. You have the Knights Hospitallers in England, the Order of St. John, and of course the Templars, which had been very controversial. The Catholic Church the other day just forgave them about some of their misdeeds. But all of these organizations, the Knights, whether it's the Knights of Malta or the Templar, Skull and Bones, they all seem to be coming together against two things. The first thing is Islamic fundamentalism, because Islamic fundamentalism threatens the United States and their position from both an economic and a political standpoint. So it would make sense that the Skull and Bones, which are largely economic, and Council of Foreign Relations, would close ranks. It also makes sense that the Knights of Malta and Opus Dei, who are threatened by Islamic fundamentalism, would close ranks with the other organizations. There's a very good book written about Opus Dei and the Knights of Malta. It's called People of God. But it also shows the interlocking relationships. Some of it's exaggerated, some of it's too conspiratorial, but it shows the relationships between Skull and Bones, Knights of Malta, and so on. For instance, George Bush has been in Skull and Bones since he's been at Yale, George Bush Sr. He's also an honorary Knight of Malta, okay? And he's also a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. Now, that doesn't mean there's a big conspiracy, but it just means that there's probably a few thousand people in these organizations that really run our government, run our economy, and they are fighting, they're coming together to fight Islamic fundamentalism. The second theme that I see a lot of secret societies moving into is the reaction of what I believe is a conspiracy against the United States, and that's the alliance of Russia, China, certain Arab countries, Venezuela, and the old non-aligned countries like North Korea and Cuba. They want to block or slow down the United States in its growth as a superpower. And then opposed to that would certainly be Skull and Bones, which is an economic unit, the Council of Foreign Relations, and then, of course, the Catholic Church and all of its different organizations, as well as the Freemasons. The Freemasons are actually a very old and large secret society. They almost overthrew the Italian government and possibly the French government in the 1980s. And the dichotomy there is that the Freemasons in Europe, which are very secret, the P2 organization, it's called in Italy, are both Catholic and Freemason. Where in the United States, the Freemasons here are largely Protestant. There are Catholic members, but there's no real connection to the Catholic Church like there is over in Europe. But again, they have the same kind of agenda. They're conservative, they're anti-communist, they're anti-Islamic fundamentalists, they're very pro-capitalist. And I see all of these organizations starting to liaison with each other. Now, I get that from my sources in the intelligence community who both spy on these organizations and who also have members in them. There are people in CIA from Skull and Bones. There's people in the Council of Foreign Relations in our government and in intelligence services for sure. And at one time the CIA did a big study on Opus Dei. And then they allied with Opus Dei to help bring down the Soviet Union. Carl Bernstein wrote a great book about them and the Pope and how CIA used Opus Dei's cell structure to penetrate both the Polish and the Russian, back then the Soviet Communist Party. And it's become more and more evident that the intelligence services go in and out of the secret societies. They use them. Secret society may contact an intelligence service, somebody in the CIA or somebody in British or French intelligence to do a background check on somebody or check them out. So it's an interlocking kind of organization. I wouldn't say it's a sinister conspiracy, but they do have their own agenda. They are globalist for the most part, and they're elitist. Now, what I see happening with this alliance of secret societies, the Russians, who are paranoid anyway under Putin, and the Chinese, who are very worried about the whole economic situation of the United States as a superpower and challenging them and working with them, also are afraid of secret societies. The KGB, the old KGB, and the Russian intelligence service today constantly tries to spy on Skull and Bones, Opus Dei, the Council of Foreign Relations, and are extremely paranoid about Freemasonry in Russia. So we're getting into something that actually it mirrors almost like before World War II. It's the same type of situation where there's an alliance of secret societies, intelligence services, to fight various isms. We're trying to fight Islamic fundamentalism now, and Russia, China, and some of the other non-aligned countries like Venezuela, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Bolivia, North Korea, some countries in Africa, also in Europe, are trying to block or stop the United States from expanding so much.
Well, let me just ask you a question at this point. I went and talked to a gentleman with the CIA, and he said that at least under certain circumstances, sometimes on various issues, the CIA would actually work with the KGB on projects. Was that ever, certainly, did that ever go on during the Cold War?
Yes, it did. I'll give you a couple examples. The FBI worked with the Cuban Intelligence Service on issues where Cuban diplomats were attacked here in the United States, and they'd have meetings and cooperate, but they continue to run operations against each other. I have a very good friend of mine who I used to work against. He runs a major Russian television radio station in Staten Island now. He was in the Soviet Intelligence Service. And I'll just tell you, I trusted him more than some other people in our own services. They do work on joint projects together occasionally where both their interests are at stake. But the Russians and the Americans are having a huge divorce, and it's continuing. Russian intelligence is building up against the United States. You see what Mr. Putin is doing in Iran this week. They're extorting Europe. They want to have some leftover vestiges of a superpower, and yet a lot of the things that they're doing are known to the United States because Putin basically just wants to sell energy and control energy in the Caspian Sea and other parts of the world. Oh, but I would say on a scale of 1 to 10 today, 10 being the worst scenario, we are at a 9 with the Russians. We work against them and they work against us. They spy against us. And they take secrets and sell them to different people. They're constantly trying to penetrate our government. They're trying to get the latest technology. It's not going to do them any good because their empire has failed. But they have tremendous resentment at the United States in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Lithuania, especially Azerbaijan, Belarus, Georgia, where the United States has really put not only bases in, but we've helped economically because we don't want those countries ever to return to communists. And the Russians, you know, they're proud people. They're very angry at us. It's like they just woke up and found out that they're not a superpower, but they're trying to form arrangements with non-aligned countries or Iran in the Middle East for their own benefit to either buy arms or control energy. And I think it's going to be increasingly a crisis mode with the Russians. We thought we had an understanding with them, and we don't. And if you look at what's going to happen over the next couple months between what Russia is doing with energy and in Iran, I think we're headed to some very bad times and could be a very expensive war. President Bush today came out and said that if Iran gets nuclear weapons, the world may be threatened with World War III. I mean, that's quite a statement for an American president to make. I mean, so what's happening, getting back to secret societies, they're starting to close ranks, I think almost in an American way, in a lie with each other to fight our outside enemies, which are perceived to be not only Islamic fundamentalism, but increasingly more and more challenges from Russia and China.
And I think that that is really where we are today. I think we're, America is moving into a very, very dangerous situation. There are a lot of things that are going on that really don't make sense. One of them would be, why do we want to build added ballistic missile systems in both Czechoslovakia and in Poland? I think Russia feels threatened. We'll talk more about this with John Quirk when we get back. And John, certainly this is one of the things I've been sort of puzzled about, is certainly the administration is talking about putting in added ballistic missile systems in both Czechoslovakia and...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Thank you. fabulous amounts of money and trying to, certainly help the Russians dismantle their nuclear weapons, but they really weren't dismantling them. We were supposedly buying their nuclear-grade uranium, came out of the missiles, and we spent $4 billion on uranium that wasn't nuclear-grade, in other words, wasn't weapons-grade uranium. How could you make a mistake like that? And then we helped them dismantle their submarines, and of course we poured billions of dollars into all of this. And the question is, why would we have spent so much money building up Russia today? Russia is the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the entire world. They have reserves somewhere around about $40 to $45 billion. They're really doing very well financially. America, of course, is the greatest debtor nation in the world, and despite that fact, we're still shipping billions of dollars to Russia, which doesn't quite make sense. We're actually dismantling many of our nuclear weapons, our MX missiles. We've dismantled the major weapon system we had here, that would have allowed us to retaliate should there be a nuclear war, and we've done away with so much of that, and the Russians have said they're going to disarm, but they haven't done it. So many unanswered questions, John. How could our leaders be so foolish unintentionally?
Well, if you look at the Russian point of view and look at what Putin said yesterday and today in Iran, he basically criticized the United States. He threatened the United States not to use a former Soviet republic, Azerbaijan, where I've had a lot of experience. I know a lot of the leaders in Azerbaijan. They're very pro-U.S. A lot of people don't know this, but Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice make lots of trips to Azerbaijan that are never reported. But Putin basically came out and said, look it, you, America, we don't want you in this area. He basically said the U.S. should not plan to use Azerbaijan, a former Soviet republic, as a staging ground from any possible military action.
Against
and a number
Iran,
of your
of
shows, I've mentioned that Azerbaijan is one of the main sources of intelligence for us on Iran. So the Putin, I'll tell you what the Russians feel. And I lived in Russia. I spent time there. There's a book written about my work in Russia. The Russians are very proud people. They see the United States as becoming a superpower. They believe that if we remove Iran from the chessboard, the United States will then dominate all the oil in the Caspian Sea. Now, we've already got control, basically. I mean, the United States gets a lot of oil from Azerbaijan. All our oil companies are there. The Azerbaijanis love us, okay? Now, the Caspian Sea, which is an inland sea, belongs to all the Caspian states. These are former Russian states. But Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan has become very pro-U.S., and they've discovered, like you just said, billions of barrels of oil. So the Russians are afraid that if we go through Iran and eliminate Iran's nuclear ambitions and control the Gulf oil like we do now, we will have better access to all the oil in the Caspian Sea. And as I've always said, Iraq is a stepping stone to Iran. Iran is a stepping stone to all the oil in the Caspian Sea. And there's three countries that are vying for control of that resource: America, Russia, and China. And getting back to secret societies, we don't want to get too far off the goal, but Skull and Bones, the Council of Foreign Relations, even the Catholic Church, through its organizations, are very pro for the U.S. to control that oil. Now, Putin doesn't want that to happen because his main resource, besides selling arms to everybody, as you just said, is oil and energy. So I think what he's doing, he's kind of puffing himself up a little bit while he's in Iran. But he also knows that if we do attack Iran, he will benefit by selling all his oil and natural gas at exorbitant prices to Europe. What he's worried about is the future. He sees the United States as a hegemonist group, a big octopus reaching out, and if we take out Iran, or Iran falls by itself internally after we take military action, and we will have the dominant role in Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, where all the billions of barrels of oil. And the Russians won't be able to do anything about it. They don't have the manpower, the navy, or anything else. What they do have is 20,000 nuclear missiles.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Quirk, and Sir T. John has been talking certainly about the about Central Asia. There you have Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan and Turkestan, and you have, of course, Azerbaijan and Uzbekistan, and I can't remember all the names of all those places, but one of the things that's really most important is that here are some of the largest oil pools in the world. And back in 1997, Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote a book. It was called The Grand Chessboard. And, of course, Brzezinski is one of the major people working behind the scenes within the secret societies. He organized the Trilateral Commission. Of course, it's not secret, but it is certainly one of the most powerful organizations in the world today. And certainly Brzezinski was the National Security Advisor under President Carter, and I personally believe responsible for really creating the background to this, with everything going on today, and the rise of Islamic fundamentalism. But in this 1997 book, Brzezinski talked about whoever controls Central Asia controls the world, because that is the center of the world. And great thinkers, great military leaders throughout the centuries have always felt that he who controls Central Asia controls the world. Do you think that that's part of the objective, the grand objective behind what's going on today, John?
Oh, I think it is the major objective. It was in Bush's thinking several years ago when we went into Iraq. It's the thinking now, and what Bush has in his axis of evil, he's eliminated two axes of evil. He called Iran the third one. And then there's a lot of people on our side to do something about Iran. The Saudis, who are Sunnis, want to get rid of the Iranian government, who are Shia. They have support with Jordan, Kuwait, Turkey, Libya, and Egypt, not just Israel. The Iranians have threatened the Israelis a number of times. And the conundrum, if you will, is that while Putin is kind of threatening the United States, he's also trying to negotiate in Tehran on behalf of the five permanent UN security members, the U.S., China, Russia, Britain, and France, and Germany, a group that has led efforts to try to resolve the stalemate with Tehran. The other thing that Russia is doing, which he really telegraphs as punches, it said that they warned the Iranians that they would not help them with one of their major nuclear plants because the Iranians were slow in making payments. Now, the Iranians have said that they are not in arrears, and they accused Russia...
Hold that stuff right there, John, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is John Quirk, who spent many years in intelligence and, of course, is certainly well-known for his work throughout the world. Teaches at diplomatic schools in both London and Paris, or at least London and France, and certainly has recently returned from a visit to the Mideast and knows many of the people there in key positions. And, of course, Steve was just talking about how Putin now is beginning to talking to the Iranians and he's putting some pressure on them. Do you think that Putin is really going to get the Iranians to back down as far as their effort to develop, weapons-grade uranium?
No, I don't think they're going to back down at all. The other reason that Moscow is upset with the United States, the U.S. has plans to build huge pipelines to deliver natural gas, oil, hydrocarbons to the West, bypassing Russia, okay? Because the Russians tried to exploit Europe and us before. So the U.S. is in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Azerbaijan, going all around. We don't have to do that. Once once Iran is downsized, because they're not even shipping that much oil. So Putin is in a bad position himself. He's kind of puffing himself up and posturing and threatening and things like that. But at the same time, he's playing with us. He knows that we're the major power there, not Iran. What he's trying to do with Iran is get paid for all the nuclear equipment and technology that they've sold to the Iranians. He's trying to also show the other Muslim states that Russia is not so bad as the United States. We're not bullies. But it's really all about oil, okay? And it's that's what Russia is all about. Putin came out today and said that nations should not pursue oil pipeline projects in the area if they were not in support by regional powers, meaning Iran. Well, he's completely wrong, because Azerbaijan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan are all pro-U.S. They all want to deal with us. They all want to ship us their oil. So in that sense, we're competitors for oil with Putin. So the only thing he could do with Iran is give them support and say, listen, we're against the U.S. attacking. And he'll back off of that as we get closer to attacking Iran, because he's still going to benefit. Because if the Gulf is all blocked up with tankers and military action, Russia is definitely going to, they've got the major pipelines into Europe. They'll make a fortune on natural gas and oil. And then they'll have to deal with the situation when the United States really is in a position to control all that oil. So it's politics and economics, but it's mainly economics.
And I think it's really, this is such an excellent point, and I don't think most people understand that should we, of course, get into a war with Iran, and we'll be talking about that in the next hour. Well, of course, they said there could be a total disruption of the oil that's coming out of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia and the other countries there in the Persian Gulf. In that instance, why, we could expect oil to go up to $100 or $120 or more a barrel. And of course, the major supplier of Europe, of Eastern Europe, and certainly of Western Europe today is Russia. Russia is the major supplier of both oil and natural gas. And they would come out, I mean, they would become, as you point out, fabulously wealthy. In fact, they would actually benefit tremendously should the America, you know, go to war with Iran, and Iran retaliates by disrupting oil production along the Persian Gulf. So I think that this is something that he has in the back of his mind, don't you, John?
I think so. And the Chinese, having the Chinese come in, what would also happen is that the dollar is now overvalued. We are in very bad shape with the dollar. Our trade deficit is unbelievable. People are predicting that the dollar will collapse. I think our trade deficit in June was like almost $27 billion. The Chinese have $1.4 trillion in foreign reserves, and they came out yesterday and today and said we could use that as a political weapon. Now, let me tell you why they said that. They said that for several reasons, and you know, you'll see a lot of things in the press that the dollar is going to fail, the euro is going to go up, the Chinese and the Japanese are going to abandon the dollar, the Saudis are going to dump the dollar, and so on and so forth. That's the scare tactic today, along with you know, like if Japan and China lead the flight from the dollar, and the IMF raises the prices, and the Saudis fear the dollar's collapse, then what that is all about is the Chinese are basically saying this. If there's a war with Iran and the Gulf is backed up, and they don't have pipelines yet, they're trying to develop them to the same place we are in Central Asia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and so on. They have some agreements, but they're fighting with the United States and Russia over that too. They're basically saying the United States has to guarantee oil shipments from the Gulf. If not, the Chinese economy would collapse and they'll take us down. They basically said today, the Chinese, I read the Chinese newsletters, the Chinese came out today and they said, this is what they said. China has a nuclear option. Okay, which could trigger a dollar crash at any time that they want. Okay? Now, if you read between the lines, they're not only starting to threaten us, these campaign of economic threats are also directed against the United States. Disappointment in Chinese food, Chinese toys with lead, but more, they're paranoid that if there's a war in the Gulf, they will not get the oil for their economy. And their economy is booming. Buildings are building in Shanghai and Peking and so on and so forth. So when you look at it, it could look like there's a conspiracy between Russia and China. Now, here's the thing. If they dump the dollar, they're going to be just as much in trouble as we are, because then we won't have enough money to buy Chinese products, okay? So I think what's going to happen over the next 2 months, we are in a terrible crisis with Iran, with the International Monetary Fund, with the dollar, with our trade deficit, with immigration, and the only thing that will distract people from that is a war. Even if it's a limited military war. And I think that that's what certainly people in secret societies are hoping for, certainly the Council for Foreign Policy and Foreign Relations. And if there's slower economic growth in the United States and a weaker dollar, and then huge trade imbalances, okay, and the trade deficit and huge financial surpluses build in Asia, and oil's involved, okay, the only way you can get out of that, you can go back in history and look at the Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, is a war. That changes everything. And I think that's what the United States' goal is. The United States' goal is to have a limited military action, straighten the dollar out, straighten Russia out, and kind of put China at ease. Not in their place, but at ease.
Well, I think maybe we should clarify, when the Chinese are speaking of the nuclear option, they're not really speaking of a nuclear attack. They're speaking of the use of the dollar, or at least dumping the dollar, would have the effect almost of a nuclear attack, because it would certainly disrupt our economy. So the nuclear option really has to do with turning away from the dollar, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what it means. It means that they hold about $900 billion in U.S. bonds. They have a huge surplus of dollars, and they would use that. This is what they call it. This is the Chinese state media has called it a nuclear option, not a war or anything. It's all economic. And I'll tell you, what's interesting, the more you study the dollar, the trade deficit, we are so interlocked with the Chinese that we can't afford to abandon them and not have oil shipped to them from the Gulf and other places, even Venezuela, which they're starting to make deals with. And they can't afford to eliminate us as a market. We buy everything from them. Everything that you possibly can imagine, as you know, we buy from them. So I think when it comes to a war with Iran or a military attack, even though they're against us, and they voted against us in the Security Council recently, they don't want to see Iran develop nuclear weapons because it could threaten them economically with the United States.
Well,
it's all about oil.
Well, do you think that that actually we have some sort of agreement with China that should we attack Iran, although they might, the Chinese will rant and rave, that they're not really going to do much of anything other than, just rant and rave?
Yeah, I think they will come out and, you know, make some apologies to, you know, people in Islamic countries, but they want their economy to keep going. Remember also that China, Russia, the United States are all part of the Security Council and the UN, and the UN has been criticized and has backed off from sanctions, but they put the United States in a bad position. But the United States is starting to put even more pressure on Iran. We're getting, we have a lot of support from countries in Eastern Europe, the Gulf areas, as I mentioned, Saudi Arabia and that, they're all lobbying us to do something. Plus Israel. Israel, how can Israel possibly survive with a nuclear Iran? And Putin made a fool out of himself today. I mean, when he was in Iran, he basically came out and made a ridiculous statement that Iran is only seeking peaceful uses of nuclear energy. I mean, he didn't visit all 450 plants where they're enriching uranium. You know, and here's the other thing. Iran rejected the Security Council's demand on its covert atomic work. Now, Russia is part of the Security Council, and Putin also said Monday he would actively negotiate in Tehran on behalf of the permanent members of the Security Council, U.S., Russia, China, Britain, and France. So I think what Iran is going to do, they're going to bide for more time. That's what they're good at. They're going to use Russia to delay any more sanctions and activities. The United States will have a little bit more patience for a little bit of time, but then we're going to start being pressured by Israel, Saudi Arabia, and other people, and eventually it's a fait accompli. We have to take out their nuclear facilities.
Well, you know what, I think it should be so obvious to everybody, first of all, that Russia is building the nuclear plant in Iran, and Russia is going to supply the nuclear fuel. So basically, if Russia is going to supply nuclear fuel for the nuclear plant, then why is Iran actually trying to develop enriched uranium? They can buy that from Russia. They don't need to develop it themselves, unless, of course, their real objective is a nuclear weapon, which I suspect that's exactly what this is all about. And it should be so obvious to everybody. Russia's supplying nuclear fuel for the nuclear power plant over there. So why is Iran doing what they're doing? So, but I don't know how soon they're going to be able to have a nuclear weapon, but certainly so many of the things that are going on in the world today just don't make sense. Do you think that the secret societies are playing some part in what's going on today, that the secret societies would really like to bring us into a war with Iran, perhaps then, of course, precipitating a war with the Islamic world? Do you think that might be what's really behind what's going on?
Well, I think there's two answers to that question. First of all, if you look at Skull and Bones, they bought up all the sugar futures before the Spanish-American War and made millions of dollars. They bought up a lot of the shipping lines before World War One and made millions of dollars. And as I said, they're economically oriented, both the Kerry family and the Bush family, or the Kennedys as far as that too, have tremendous interest in oil stocks as investments, so any kind of spike in oil prices, they're going to make a fortune, just like Mr. Putin's going to make a fortune. I think the Council of Foreign Relations, as far as their political agenda, they want to see America as a super, super, superpower, and then position America to, you know, possibly give up some of our sovereignty and go to the whole one world theory that the only way to avoid war is for huge blocks of countries to get together. That's their agenda. I think the Catholic Church, which has gone back and forth with its secret societies, have very definitely are very definitely afraid of the Islamic world. I think where we're heading with the Islamic world is that, you see, after World War II, we built up all these European countries with martial aid and the Truman Doctrine and so on, and Europe flourished because of America. America saved Europe. We defeated the Nazis, we defeated the communists, and we brought prosperity to Europe, and there hasn't been a war, and there's the EU. I don't think we're going to be able to do that in the Islamic world. And there's a lot of our policymakers that are saying, how do you defeat Al-Qaeda? How do you defeat insurgency? We're trying to do it now with limited special forces in our army and our navy. We're probably going to be heading for a draft in 2 years. And so there's some philosophy that if one of these countries, like Iran, state-sponsored, or a terrorist group obtains a nuclear weapon, dirty bomb, or a biological weapon that could threaten our national security and our population, the only way to react to the Islamic fundamentalists is to annihilate them. I mean, that's what we did to Japan. We annihilated them. We dropped two bombs. We destroyed their cities. We annihilated the Nazi war machine. We destroyed all their cities and their economy. And I think the United States is poised now to do the same thing if a Pakistan is overthrown by Islamic fundamentalists or an Egypt is overthrown. I don't think we can negotiate with those people. They're terrorists. They're fundamentalists. They believe in their own interpretation of the Quran. And they've got their own secret societies in Iran and so on. So I think that secret societies, to answer your question, have formed an opinion that to preserve our national security, our prosperity, our wealth, our jobs, our families, that we have to take very drastic action against Islamic fundamentalism. And it could be started with Iran. This could go into a wider war. I mean, I was a little shocked today at President Bush's statement. I'll just quote it for you, what he said today. He warned world leaders that they must prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons, and I quote, if you're interested in avoiding World War III. Quite a demonstrative statement from the President of the United States.
I certainly think that it is. And of course, we have secret societies not only in the West, we have secret societies within the Islamic world. And of course, many of these are ancient secret societies. And of course, we see only the surface. What really motivates them? What is the common denominator? Is there a common denominator between the secret societies in the East and the West? And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, John, I share your concern about where we seem to be headed. And of course, when we talk a little bit about the secret societies within the Islamic world, do you want to mention, is it the Hezatua Society? That's probably not the right pronunciation, but there is certainly one in Iran that's an ancient secret society, isn't there?
Yes, you've got the upfront overt name is Quds. Quods. They believe that the Mahdi is coming back. They have tremendous influence over the Grand Ayatollah, the President of Iran, the military, the intelligence services, and this is a very strict, fundamentalist, radical interpretation of the Quran that the end of the world is coming. That's what they believe. And then you have the Salafists in Mali and southern Algeria. You have the Islamic Brotherhood, which is mainly political. You have some overt, covert secret societies like Hamas and Hezbollah that have groups within their organizations. And usually the Islamic groups are very fundamentalist, and they have their own interpretation of the Quran. And I would say that the Shia version of those people are the worst compared to the Sunnis. The Sunnis always, to me, have been somebody you could get along with and negotiate, and somewhat secular, like, you know, the secular Turks or even the secular Iraqis. But the Iranians are spreading through their secret societies. They want a Shia arc in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And they're doing subversion. They're insinuating themselves into the intelligence services of different countries. They're building cells. They're slowly developing. They know how to operate in what we call in the intelligence world tradecraft. They operate secretly. They know we're listening to their phones and through satellites, and they operate at a very low level, but it's very effective. I mean, I'm very worried about what's happening in Pakistan and Egypt. Those two countries could be possible flashpoints for overthrowing the existing government. And if they do, there'll be fundamentalists that are going to try to take over the government.
And I certainly share your concern. In fact, Pakistan is looking increasingly unstable, as is Egypt, and even Turkey, although the military is firmly in the hands of the secularists. Why? There is a growing radical Islamic movement, even within Turkey itself. So, I mean, certainly the whole of the Near East and the Middle East is really a powder keg, and of course all we would need would be some major confrontation that would, of course, lead to the overthrow of those governments. Hang on, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with John Quirk. Now, I really want to point out that we do talk through the breaks, and so if you'd like to get the full text of what was said, the tapes or CDs of the program are available from Radio Liberty, and you'll get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to listen to the program, that these programs are archived at our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can actually listen to a live feed of four of our five programs every day for 9 hours. In other words, there's repeat programming, and then, of course, the programs are archived, and they're available on MP3 because we want you to be able to get the information you're going to hear on our program and make it available to your friends. And then, of course, if you go to our website, why, there's a section there that has DVDs on it, and you can pull those down and watch them free of charge. We also suggest you go to our letters and pull down the letters that we've done through the years over the last 10 years or so, almost 10 years, and file those away and go through them and read them and study them and get the documentation that we offer. And if you need documentation on anything that's said, you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to help you get the documentation. And we want to mention that on October 28th, that's a little over a week and a half from now, we're having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. A great facilities. We are there every year. And this is going to be on a Sunday. We do hope that many of you will be able to come. And if you do come, it's going to start, well, the doors will open at 7:30 in the morning, and then, of course, we'll go until 5 or 5:30. We'll be serving lunch. We're bringing in outside speakers. So if you'd like to come to our conference, if you haven't been before, or maybe you have been before, October the 28th, of course, you'll need reservations. We have to know this week how many people are going to be there. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do we make sense out of so much of what's going on in the world today and secret societies, and is there a common denominator behind them? Well, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me recommend it to you. Of course, you can watch the DVD. And interestingly enough, the book came from the DVD. The DVD didn't come from the book. It is available at radioliberty.com, Brotherhood of Darkness, but we recommend the book because it has all of the documentation for everything we say. And we want you to check it out and make sure we're telling you the truth. And then, of course, there is a secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies. And they have been around for 5,000 years. And, of course, that's in our talk on the Forbidden Secret. And the Forbidden Secret, and it's available on DVD. There's also a syllabus that goes with that to explain so much of what's going on today and the phrases that you'll hear bantered about in the various speeches that are given. Phrases like what our founders declared a new order of the ages. They were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What in heaven's name does that mean? And who is the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm that President Bush referred to not once but twice in his first inaugural address, that most people have never even considered that an angel rides in the whirlwind? Well, we, of course, try to explain so much of what's going on in the talk on the Forbidden Secret. And that if you haven't seen the award-winning DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which goes into the intelligence agencies and going back into the 1600s, and then, of course, the secret architecture of our nation's capital. Of course, they're both available, both DVDs available from Radio Liberty, and, of course, they sold their souls for rock and roll set, the 3 hour, the 4 hour, the 10 hours of videos, which, of course, explains to you what goes on in the music industry, but that carries over into every aspect of life. So I remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. We ask you to pray for America, but to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour of Radio Liberty. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and certainly the views of our special guest this evening, John Quirk, who spent many years working in intelligence, and now he has his own company, but he still has contacts throughout the world, and just recently back from the Middle East and the Near East, and certainly talking to people in the Caspian Sea area, and very, very concerned, as I am, by the fact that it looks like we may very well be going to war with Iran. And the question is not if, but I think it's a matter of when. When, of course, something will happen that will justify an attack on Iran. And as the president said just this morning, President Bush had said, you know, in essence, if we do not stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons, then we are going to be in World War III. Well, of course, my concern is, if we do, of course, get into a war with Iran, we never know how a war is going to end up, and this could have catastrophic implications. I think our leaders anticipate a war that may go for a week or so, and we'll target certain areas in Iran, but not certainly try to invade the country. At least that's my understanding. That's not the plan. What is your understanding, John?
Well, I think the plan has been pretty much set. The only delays that the United States seems to have had are setbacks from the UN Security Council. I think that we've had a couple crisis situations that happened just in the last couple of days. One, Turkey has approved military action to go into Iraq to fight the Kurdish separatists, many of whom the United States has trained. I mean, the PPK, which is the Kurdish army, or the Kurdish revolutionary group, goes back and forth between the Kurdish army. The Turks are fed up. They have about 60,000 people on the border. The United States is engaging in tremendous diplomacy to keep Turkey at bay. I mean, they would be invading another country. Both of us are allies. Iraq and Turkey are allies of the United States. And worse than that, we've paid the Turks something like $28 billion to ease their fears about an independent Kurdistan. But the Kurds are provoking things. They've killed about 30 Turks, maybe 40, and the Turkish parliament doesn't want to seem to be weak, so they've approved military action, and they've rushed troops up to the border. Some of that could be good if we do, in fact, take military action against Iran. The other thing is the recent trip of Vladimir Putin to Iran has kind of crystallized what the Russians are all about, which is really trying to control energy in the Caspian Sea, and trying to position themselves as some kind of superpower to challenge the United States. But I don't think President Bush is deterred. What President Bush today said, which is quite amazing, he came out and he said to world leaders, and I think it was mainly directed to European leaders, if you're interested in avoiding World War II, quote unquote, they must prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons.
And that really is a rather a pointed statement, you know, talking about this possibility of a third world war, and so it almost seems that we're going to do whatever has to be done to keep Iran from getting nuclear weapons, even if it's starting a war.
That's right. He also said, I've told people if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon. Now, that's shocking to me, because I don't see the jump from stopping Iran at this stage to how it could lead to World War III.
Oh, that's all right there, please. All right, John, go right ahead.
I mean, unless you know, things are so deteriorating between American-Russian relations, so deteriorating between European and American relations, and trouble with the economy, although I don't think President Bush sees that. I think that the United States is really trying to position itself to become even a greater superpower. We've eliminated two axes of evil. We've settled with the North Koreans, and nobody gives Bush any credit for that. We've got tremendous forces in the region. We are being, you know, threatened a little bit and challenged, not really threatened from Russia, but Putin is making really weird statements about the United States. But I'm kind of mystified by a president that would talk about World War III. I don't really see the jump from the military attack on Iran to World War III. Even if you believe there could be a wider regional war. Now, we all know what the Israelis, with American help, did several weeks ago. They attacked a Syrian secret nuclear facility. That's been in the papers. I mean, I knew about it a couple days afterwards. I received a lot of satellite photographs, and it's all coming out now. So the Syrians are trying to get nuclear weapons. The Iranians are trying to get them. But I don't understand how President Bush would talk about a World War III. So I'm a little mystified by that, unless he's really trying to ratchet up the pressure on other people like the UN and Europe, which has really have not supported us against Iran. The Iranians have made all kinds of statements to wipe out Israel and the Jews, and the Europeans don't even condemn them. You know, you'll see a few articles in the newspaper, but that's about it. The UN, which in my opinion is wholly owned by the Arab League, doesn't even condemn Iran about that. So maybe Bush is trying to put more pressure and use some rhetoric, scare tactic rhetoric, but when I hear World War III, it's pretty scary to me because it means really nuclear war.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I think, of course, that the impact would have on the people of Europe who witnessed World War I and witnessed World War II, and after both of those wars, they were willing to give up their national sovereignty to avoid another war. The last thing the people of Europe who really see the ravages of war want is another world war. Now, the American people, of course, have never really seen war here in our nation, not since the time of the Civil War. But I can tell you, I saw Europe after the Second World War. I wouldn't want to see it here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. One of the interesting things about the Israeli attack on Syria here a couple of weeks ago was apparently both Syria and Iran had purchased some very sophisticated radar situations, equipment from Russia that was supposed to be able to counter the blocking mechanism provided by America, both Israel and available to the American forces. And at least what we have heard is that the anti-aircraft, the Syrian anti-aircraft facilities, really didn't work, which means that they've invested a tremendous amount of money buying sophisticated radar and anti-aircraft missile to protect themselves from air attacks, and it's really, it would appear to be worthless. Have you heard any rumors about that?
Well, what the Israelis in the beginning were very much afraid of these new radar buckshot missile systems that the Russians supplied, mainly to the Iranians. They can see a plane coming from about 40 kilometers away and launch missiles to destroy, you know, either a fighter or a low-level bomber. The Israelis were very, very much afraid of that. And what they did was, I think they succeeded with good intelligence to outmaneuver the particular radar batteries that were in Syria. They didn't have that many. Iranians have many of them, but they didn't have enough where this cave was, where they either had a partial nuclear bomb or partial nuclear reactor. A lot of intelligence hasn't come out about it, but everybody basically believes that the United States supplied a lot of the intelligence and ordnance, and the Israelis supplied the deployment with the airplanes and took it out. So I wouldn't count too much on that happening again, because my friends in the military told me that this new Russian radar buckshot missile system is just unbelievable. If we attack Iran with fighters, we'll lose a lot of our planes. And Russia continues to help the Iranians. They're selling them nuclear technology, weapons, missiles for their submarines. They're making supposedly a lot of money on this, although one of the reasons Mr. Putin is there is he's complaining that the Iranians haven't paid them. See, the Iranians are in very bad shape economically. They're not pumping enough oil. They don't have many foreign reserves. They don't have many exports. The people in the country are starting, you know, to be angry about the leadership. They're spending lots of money on military, and they're getting it from Russia, and Russia's fed up with giving them credit. So Iran has a lot of problems in that area.
Well, I would think that, you know, if we would just simply hold off, keep the pressure on Iran, try to keep sanctions on Iran, that sooner or later, why, the government would be overthrown there, because, you know, they're rationing gasoline there. Certainly there's a shortage of jobs. The economy is not doing well at all. And I think an awful lot of, very large part of the Iranian population hate the Mullah's government. And if they had their druthers, they'd just vote them out. But of course, when they have elections, why, they have the democratic elections, they just don't allow any real opposition. So, I mean, they have sort of a one-party system over there. You vote for the candidate the Mullahs choose, or you don't vote at all. So I would think it would only really be a matter of time before the country would be destabilized. If we hold off, this is my concern, is that it would appear that perhaps the administration is not going to hold off, is going to precipitate something, because I believe, of course, that with time, eventually, why, the current regime will topple. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. I think that there is dissent there. There's unhappiness. There's economic, terrible, terrible economic problems. We're not pumping oil. The trouble is, they seem to be accelerating their enrichment of uranium and plutonium and their technology in developing a weapon. So instead of building roads and bridges and helping people in their own country with export-import or currency or travel, they continue to accelerate the development of nuclear weapons. And there's disagreements on all parts here. Mr. Putin today came out and said, Iranians are not developing nuclear weapons. He actually said this. He said they're developing it for peaceful means. But he hasn't visited all 458 plants, and I think he's a liar anyway, because the Russian Intelligence Service and the Russian Atomic Energy Commission is helping Iran in enrich uranium and develop weapons. So I think he's a liar. I think the problem is, again, going back, it's bad. We don't have good intelligence. The CIA experts, David Kay and other people within CIA that work on this from all angles, from defectors and spies we have and satellites and the National Security Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, we still think they're far away, up to 2009, from having a bomb. The Israelis say no. It could be 6 months or less, or possibly a year. So if you look at a chart, if you line up things on a yellow pad of paper, what's going to come first, a nuclear bomb or toppling their regime? Now, their regime is extremely repressive when it wants to be. They go into the streets and round people up, and then they don't do anything for a while, but their intelligence service is first rate. They have a network of spies in Europe, Iraq, all over the Mideast and Arab countries. They've got this radical sect that really influences the Grand Ayatollah and the President of Iran. So I think we're in a race. It's a time. If you sat down and you list month by month, November, December, January 2008, and you continued, you have to see where they're going to be in developing their nuclear facilities versus regime change. And I think they're so repressive, they have such a good secret police that people are afraid to speak out. You know, there have been some limited demonstrations by students and women, but there's no real opposition to the government there. There are people that are unhappy. It probably would be better if we waited to a certain extent so we don't irritate the young people there that are really, really like the U.S. But at the same time, I would say, how long can Israel take a chance on them developing a nuclear weapon? How long can Europe? The Atomic Energy Commission, which is, I think, very anti-U.S. under Baradi, and the U.N. Have shot down American advances on more sanctions. So they want to give the Iranians more time. I think the Russians want to position themselves as a member of the Security Council to be the hero and try to negotiate with Iran. But I think Iran is going to spin them, delay, and they're not going to back down. You see, the Iranians, the way they think, they have to have nuclear weapons. Once they have nuclear weapons, they're in a better position to deal with Israel and to deal with the United States. That's their sick, demented, you know, Shia cultural opinion on why they need nuclear weapons. They don't get it. They just don't get it that the closer they are, either Israel or the United States, or even France, which has threatened them in the last few weeks, would take military action against them. And nobody is going to stop us, or France or Israel. The Russians aren't going to stop us. So we have basically a blank check. I think the United States is trying to bend over backwards to go along with the recent UN sanctions to say, let's give Iran more time. But Iran is refusing to let the Russians in, refusing to let other people look at their clandestine research facilities. So maybe this is why President Bush came out today, and, you know, the other statement he basically said was, and I quote, "So I've told people that if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon." So he's kind of telling other countries should get on board, and they're not getting on board with us.
Well, do you think that America would certainly go and attack Iran without, of course, the permission of the United Nations? We would use a preemptive attack on Iran. Certainly, ordinarily, you'd want a United Nations resolution of some sort, but I don't think we'd actually get a United Nations resolution. So would we have to have, perhaps if there was something we did to stimulate an attack by Iran, and then we would use that as a justification? How would we possibly justify a preemptive attack on Iran as far as the American people, as far as the world is concerned?
Well, it's a very good question, and I think we're doing two tracks here, three tracks maybe. We are really pushing the envelope with the Security Council, and we're saying, look, Iran is thumbing their nose at us. They're thumbing their nose at the UN. They're thumbing their nose at the United Nations and the Atomic Energy Commission. The problem is very bad intelligence. The people in the UN and the Atomic Energy Commission and the Russians are saying, hey, we think they're just developing it for peaceful means, okay? That's where the weak sisters are coming into play. So I think the United States is going to push for that as much as it can to get a UN resolution. Short of that, I think we're looking for a provocation, okay, a bigger smoking gun about Iranian developing IEDs or influence or penetrating the government. That seems also to be waning because I think the Iranians are very smart. They're backing off of sending their trainers into Iraq. They're backing off full-scale development of IEDs. The counterinsurgency is changing a little bit in Iraq. American military commanders are more confidential. They're not more confident. They're not condemning Iran like they were several weeks ago. I mean, this changes from day to day. I think the odd man out here, the two odd men out, are a meeting of the minds of the Saudi Arabians and the Israelis, where they're just not going to wait any longer. They're going to demand that President Bush do something. And this is where the United States would definitely incur the wrath of Europe and Arab countries about what they would see as a bullying type of thing against Iran.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. And, John, are you suggesting that really both Saudi Arabia and Israel are agreed upon the fact that the United States must really stop Iran, in other words, somehow take military action against them, and that at least on this point Saudi Arabia and Israel agree?
Yes, I think so. And I think one of the catalysts for this, which is going to happen, is the future peace agreement or peace movement towards peace between Fatah, the Palestinians, and the Israelis. They're going to be meeting in Annapolis, I believe, very soon. It'll be a summit between those two powers. There'll probably be a general understanding of a peaceful country, an independent Palestine. They're doing it, the United States and Israel are doing it to support Fatah against Hamas in the Gaza and the West Bank. They're doing it. I think the Israelis are also trying to protect their flank against Hamas with the support of the Palestinians. They're trying to also make some kind of agreement with the Palestinians, which would give the Israelis a carte blanche to go in and finally destroy Hezbollah. I think that's coming probably before we even attack Iran, or it'll all blow up at the same time. It'll be an Israeli attack against Hezbollah. They have to do it. It'll be a continued warning or possibly attacks against Syria. I mean, Syria has just been found out to try to develop nuclear weapons from the North Koreans. I mean, the Israelis were kind of shocked by all of that, and the world doesn't seem shocked by it. I'm shocked that the Syrians try to get away with this. So it shows the malevolent nature of Syria and Iran to continue the pot boiling. And one of the things that's hard to understand from our point of view, from a foreign policy point of view, or from a practical negotiating standpoint, diplomacy, if you will, which has failed, is that the Iranians have this strict interpretation of the Quran that the end of the world is coming. Now, how do you possibly deal with a country like that in our, you know, our cultural way of thinking, the way we do diplomacy, when you're fighting the fundamentalist belief that the end of the world is coming? This is what the Iranian Shias believe, and that to facilitate the end of the world, they have to have nuclear weapons. And countries like Russia and Europe and the UN, they don't even address that issue. The Israelis do, because they're seriously threatened by Iran. So I think as time builds, I think Bush will have to do something, even if he incurs the wrath and people say he did a preemptive strike and he's a warmonger and they're going to criticize him in this country and overseas, but I think he's of the belief that there's no way we can have an Iran, even with peaceful nuclear facilities.
You're speaking now, then, certainly of a nuclear power plant, that we cannot allow them to have nuclear power?
Well, here's the thing. We don't trust them.
Right.
They've got 450 research facilities. Putin, today, again, he came out and he basically said, look it, they're developing things for peaceful reasons. But he doesn't have any evidence.
Hold that thought, right, John. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's John Quirk. And John was simply saying that what we're dealing with in Iran are people who have an entirely different worldview. And certainly there's the cult within the Shia religion that believes, of course, that the end of the world is coming. And, of course, to facilitate that, Iran needs nuclear weapons, and even though there may be millions of people killed in nuclear war, won't that be wonderful? Because it will bring back the Mahdi, and the Mahdi is the Islamic counterpart of the Messiah, the world ruler, who's to come to bring world peace. And so, but if Iranian leadership really feels this way, and I believe some of them do, we're dealing with people who are really totally irrational, unconcerned about the devastation that would come from a nuclear war, even on their own people. And then, of course, John is simply saying that As we see what's going on today, it may very well be that our leaders are going to have to take some sort of action, because the Iranian leaderships are totally irrational. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, and supporting that, the Kremlin, Putin, has protected Iran from a U.S. push for a third round of U.N. sanctions. I mean, Iran has said that Moscow's foot-dragging in building a nuclear power plant, they're supposed to build a nuclear power plant for $1 billion in Bushehr, is delaying everything. And then Putin goes back and says, threatening somebody in the case of the Iranian leadership will lead nowhere. And yet, Putin may develop something when he's there. He's being watched closely to see what his shift is in Russia's carefully planned stance in this nuclear standoff. And Putin is right. He said this. He said that he saw no objective data prove Western claims that Iran is trying to construct nuclear weapons. Again, we're in a situation of bad intelligence. But he did say that he would start to negotiate with Iran on behalf of the Security Council. So maybe something will come out of it. I think what's really going to come out of it is he's going to come out of there and say, Iran is willing to negotiate. Let's start. It'll drag on for weeks and months, and the United States just doesn't have the patience to put up with that stuff. Well, maybe we will, but I doubt it.
Well, is there any suggestion that Iran might have either chemical or biological war? Because, of course, we have close to 160 troops over there in Iraq, and the last thing we would want to do would be to expose them to anything of that sort.
Well, when you talk about weapons of mass destruction, we didn't find any in Iraq. There's a lot of rumors that the Russians trucked the chemical and biological things that Saddam Hussein set up to both Syria and to Iran. So maybe they've got stuff. I don't think there's been any evidence that they've had a biological warfare facility. They do have chemical weapons and chemical warheads. But the name of the game there is nuclear. And also, besides Saudi Arabia and Israeli concerns, the United States is concerned if they get a nuclear weapon that they could give it to a terrorist group. Don't forget, Iran is the top terrorist country in the world. They support Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad. They have been in and out of bed with Al-Qaeda. They're in with them. They're out with them. So they could easily give them a nuclear weapon. They could ship it to Venezuela. The crazy Chavez might put it in a container. Who knows in the world that we live in? The big problem here is the failure of diplomacy. We're not talking to them, and they're not talking to us. And I'm not sure we can trust the Russians. I mean, the Russians said that his trip there is also an effort to engage in diplomacy with Iran's supreme leader, okay, Ali Khamenei. But it doesn't mean that the Iranians are going to give in. You see, the Iranians believe that the United States is losing in Iraq, and there's another tremendous myth they have, is that we're overstretched, that we do not have the facility to attack them. And then they're so paranoid, they think that we would physically invade them, which we don't have the ability to physically invade them, but we have the ability to take out all their nuclear facilities, their research facilities. So I think the Iranians are going to spin the Russians. The Russians are going to come out and say, hey, we declare diplomatic victory, and we're going to talk to the Iranians. And the Iranians are going to eventually permit us to go in and look at their nuclear facilities. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I'm afraid that it's not going to happen either, and I fear that there may be some people in Iran, and there may be even some people in our own government who, for whatever reason, really want to see the war in the Middle East expanded. And of course, the trouble is, when you start a war, you never know how the war is going to end. And we're going to be back in just a moment with John Quirk as we begin exploring the truly explosive situation that I think is growing in the Middle East, and especially in view of what the President of the United States said this morning. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Quirk. And one of the interesting things is, you know, certainly if you look back through history, ordinarily people do not see war coming. I don't think that the average American saw the advent of the Second World War in December of 1941. I don't think that the average American really thought that America would go into the First World War, and certainly in January and February of the year 1917, having elected Woodrow Wilson on the promise that we would not go to war, because of course Woodrow Wilson had run on the platform, he kept us out of war and had promised the American people we would not go into war, and then of course by April of 1917. We were in a war, and of course the justification, well, most people have never even heard of the Zimmern letter and understand its implications, and having studied that incident, it doesn't make sense to me to this very day. But be that as it may, we were plunged into World War I, the war to end all wars, the war to make the world safe for democracy. And over 20 million people died in that terrible, terrible war. And then we were plunged into World War II, and somewhere between 50 and 60 million people died in World War II, and now we're the President of the United States today. We begin talking about World War III. And, of course, now with nuclear weapons and all the other things that are available in the way of mass killing, I mean, what are the implications of what's going on? I don't think that the average American really could realize the implications of what a world war would be like today. Do you think, John, do you think the average American even believes it's possible?
I agree with you. It's so horrific, but I support President Bush on several premises, but here's what the Iranians say. They say that they only want lesser enriched uranium to make fuel for nuclear reactors that would generate electricity. That is just completely... I'm not an expert in nuclear power, but I know enough people in the Atomic Energy Commission that say that is just insane, okay? And Iran, the second point of that, Iran has rejected the Security Council's demand to look into its clandestine atomic work. And the UN and Baradi at the International Atomic Energy Commission, they badmouth the United States for threatening military action against Iran, but they don't do anything to pressure Russia or other countries to look into how far Tehran has enriched uranium. And when you look at intelligence, I mean, maybe we have a lot of intelligence we're not sharing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John is just saying that when you look at the intelligence, and of course what the Iranians are saying is, well, all we want, of course, is just to enrich uranium to the point where we can use it for nuclear fuel in our power plants, but we don't want to build bombs. But after all, the Russians are supplying them with enriched uranium now for their power plant. So obviously, they're not being forthright. They're obviously enriching their uranium because they want to create nuclear weapons. So pick up the story there, John.
Oh, well, what it is you talk about a conspiracy. The failure of Iran to comply with all the international community's requisitions concerning its nuclear program. They've been getting away with murder. They don't let inspectors in. They don't let their Russian partners in, supposedly, although I think the Russians are probably co-conspirators in this because they're making so much money selling them stuff, and Putin likes money. And the UN doesn't know what to do. They're afraid of China and Russia, and they back down on tougher sanctions. And the Iranians don't want to negotiate. And then on top of that, you have the whole situation with Iraq, where we do have evidence, some evidence of Iranian complicity. So you have a lot of different, if you take a yellow pad of paper and you put Iran on one side, what they're not doing. They're not complying. They're enriching uranium. They continue to threaten Israel. They're buying more weapons and nuclear products from Russia. Russia's helping them. The UN is not helping us. The International Atomic Energy Commission is very critical of the United States. All they do is criticize us about threatening Iran. They don't want us to do anything about Iran, but they don't. But they let Iran off the hook. They don't inspect what they're doing. So if I was an Israeli and living in that part of the world and paranoid, and if I was an American worried about them developing the nuclear weapon, I would say we have no other choice than to attack their nuclear facilities.
Well, I think
Bush has made up his mind to do that.
Well, one thing that bothers me, of course, is that the Iranians really are fairly well armed, that they've been getting these weapons from Russia. Apparently they have, you know, not a large navy, but they have a couple of submarines, and they have a lot of smaller boats that are armed with very sophisticated weapons that could really play havoc with certain of our ships out there in the Persian Gulf. Are you concerned about, you know, the fact that if we were to attack the Iranians, at least some of their facilities would remain intact, and they might counterattack?
Well, this is how, what you were saying, a larger war would start. If they sunk one of our carriers, or if they even attacked, I believe, the Saudi and Kuwaiti oil fields and power stations, I think the United States would respond in a massive attack against them and any of their allies. I mean, then we might be bombing Syrian cities and ports. We might be bombing any areas around Iran. We might send more troops in Afghanistan to shut off the border. We might, who knows, initiate a draft overnight. You know, this is how these things expand. To me, it can all be stopped. We can have peace. We don't have to go to war if the Iranians let the inspectors in. And the question is, why don't they let them in? They do not let them in to examine their clandestine research facilities. Now, to me, that means that that's suspicious and they're lying. Now, maybe Mr. Putin can convince them, but they've even rejected him, his people, to go and inspect, because I suspect that some of the Russians are actually helping them. They give them, and the Chinese have helped them with nuclear valves and condensers and power packs to develop a nuclear weapon. So to me, it is very suspicious. I think it can all go away. The United States, we're not doing anything. All we're doing is saying, let everybody in to inspect, and the Iranians don't want to do that. Why? If they want to be part of the international community, if they want to be part of the UN, if they want to ingratiate themselves with the Security Council, why can't they let us in to inspect?
Well, of course, the thing is that, of course, the International Atomic Energy Commission keeps saying that there's nothing to worry about, that, you know, that they're convinced that the Iranians are not trying to build a bomb. But can we trust the International Atomic Energy Commission? And certainly, is the International Atomic Energy Commission being forthright with us and the world?
No, and I don't think they've let the International Atomic Energy Commission in all the plants. There's like 1,200 plants, 450 major ones, 50 of them that are enriching plutonium uranium. Let inspectors, send 100 inspectors into those 50 plants. They can spend a day or two and let them report back. Here's my question. Why are they increasing the number of centrifuges? Why are they reaching out to Venezuela and other places for a certain kind of enriched uranium? Why do people say they have enough plutonium for 30 bombs now? Why do they already have a deployment system and warheads that you could fit nuclear weapons on? Okay. Why do they keep threatening Israel? Up to a few days ago, he came back and he flip-flopped at the UN. He said, we don't want to destroy Israel. And then about 4 days ago, he said, yes, Israel must be destroyed. So, if he's engaging in that kind of rhetoric and he's not letting us inspect, the basic of looks like a duck, talks like a duck, acts like a duck is enough for me to be suspicious about their plans. You see, the Iranians at one time said, once they have nuclear weapons, nobody can stop them. Didn't say they were going to use them, but it just said, we have to be a power in the region, and in order to be that power, we must have nuclear weapons. And I can just tell you, if that happens, the United States will lose so much face and respect from Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the other areas. It'll be worse than us attacking them. It would show that the United States is a paper tiger. We didn't attack when we should. The Saudi government could panic. They're already panicking about the dollar. The Egyptian government could be overthrown. Mubarak is very, very ill. And the Israelis could strike out with tactical nuclear weapons. So this is what the Iranians are pushing the world into.
The Iranians can
stop it all by letting the inspectors go in.
All right, of course. What about the implications of what's going on in Pakistan? Pakistan is very unstable today, and certainly they have nuclear weapons, and they have a very, very sophisticated delivery systems. And is there a possibility that Musharraf and Bhutto's government, or whoever becomes the new leader there in Pakistan, could be overthrown by the radical Islamists? And then what would happen if that were to happen? We can't allow the radical Islamists to have the nuclear weapons that Pakistan has. Would we go into Pakistan militarily?
I think we would use our surrogate there, the world's largest democracy, India. I don't think India could fathom a fundamentalist Muslim government in Pakistan that would control their 30 to 40 nuclear weapons. They couldn't fathom the fact that the fundamentalists in Pakistan might use the weapons in Kashmir, which is contested between Pakistan and India, and they couldn't fathom a greater destabilization of what's happening in Afghanistan. So I think the Indians, they've said this, their government has said that they would launch a preemptive strike. I understand, however, that the relations between India and Pakistan have improved on the whereabouts of where these nuclear weapons are, the relations between them. The trouble with the Pakistani government, it's being fragmented now between Musharraf, Bhutto, who has their own followers, and then the fundamentalists, which are gaining power both in the military and more in the intelligence services and other departments of Pakistan. So you may see a coup d'etat there within the next year, and it could be as follows. Musharraf would go, Bhutto would get in. They don't want to put up with a woman as president, even though she's been there before. There's a lot of opposition to her, corruption and so on. And I think the fundamentalists would have a very good chance of taking over the government. But it would be very short-lived. I don't think the United States, Afghanistan, India, or even China or Japan, anybody in that region, go as far as farther west into even the Middle East or Central Asia, could possibly fathom a fundamentalist takeover of Pakistan. But I don't think it's in the cards.
But certainly I agree that this would be a terrible disaster. But what about Saudi Arabia? How secure is Saudi Arabia? Certainly there's a large Shia minority in Saudi Arabia. They're sort of second-class citizens. And I would think that certainly if there were a tremendous instability in both Egypt and in Pakistan, that Saudi Arabia, sort of in the middle, might very well face severe internal problems. Certainly they have a very efficient police state and very vicious treatment of opposition, but we get enough people who are desperate and angry sometimes why they can overthrow even the most stable governments.
Well, I think you're right. I think Saudi Arabia is a schizophrenic country now. They're worried about the U.S. and Iran. They're worried about the dollar. They're worried about revenue if there's an attack on their oil fields or if the Gulf's backed up. And probably one of the most serious problems they have, which is a conundrum, they just can't solve it. They have these large numbers of madras schools and the Wahhabis. And they kind of pay extortion to them, but they're creating actually future members of Al-Qaeda. A lot of these kids that graduate, 17 and 19, have wound up fighting for Al-Qaeda in Iraq against us. And they're going to Afghanistan. So on the one hand, the Saudi princes want good relations with America. They want to keep that oil revenue coming. They want to keep a lid on their country there and their neighboring countries. Their allies like Dubai and Kuwait and weaker countries like Yemen, but they've got kind of a cancer growing in them, and it's the Wahhabi and the Madras schools. And what they usually do is they pay extortion to them. They give them money and shut them up. But these schools are training grounds for future terrorists, future fundamentalists. So there's a greater chance of Saudi Arabia being overthrown by a fundamentalist group eventually, you know, maybe 10, 15 years, than Saudi Arabia ever going the democratic route. And, of course, they're our ally. We support them. And it is, it's a kind of a repressive oil state. So right now the Saudis are more threatened by Iran than anything else. This goes back hundreds of years between what was then Arabia and the Persian Empire and Iran. They've always fought. The Shia minority in Saudi Arabia is very controlled, though. It's very co-opted, monitored. The majority of people in Saudi Arabia are Sunni, and they do not want to see the expansion of Shia in neighboring Iraq and the possibility of Syria, Lebanon, and so on. So they're more adamant to the Bush administration. Their diplomats from the embassy in Washington are constantly hitting Stephen Hadley, our national security director, and national security staff with, what are you going to do about Iran? What are you going to do? Are you going to do something? Nobody's doing anything. You know, what do we have to do to get you people to do this? You know, so President Bush is under tremendous pressure from, you know, forces that want us to do something, and he's under pressure from forces that are trying to stop us to do something. But as Winston Churchill said, always count on the Americans to do what is right after they do so many things that have been wrong. And I think President Bush believes that the third axis of evil has to be removed.
Well, I think that we are living in very, very uncertain times, and I don't think the average individual here in the United States has any idea of the implications of what's going on, either financially or politically or militarily or even spiritually, and yet I believe that the world is on the edge of some dramatic and really rather frightening events. And certainly if the war starts in the Middle East, as I fear that will, and I don't know when, but I think it's only a matter of time, and everything I learn from John and elsewhere confirms that, we do not know how that war is going to end up. But what about the implications as far as the American economic stability, John? Certainly America is the greatest debtor nation in the world. I mean, we're having to finance this war that's going on in the Middle East today, in Iraq and Afghanistan, but it is certainly if we go to war with Iran, that'll even create greater drains on our finances. And of course, what about the other countries in the world simply saying, we're not going to continue supporting the dollar because we are totally dependent upon other nations financing our massive deficits? And what happens if they stop and they say, we're not going to do this? Then what happens to the financial stability of our nation?
Well, I think that's a good point, and I think this is what the Iranians and other people like the Venezuelans are hoping for, to damage us seriously economically. We're probably doing that on our own, though. We don't probably need help from other people. We've got such an unbelievable trade deficit, and I think in June it was like $27 billion, and Congress is worried about that. The Chinese own $1.4 trillion in foreign reserves. The dollar is weakening. Some people say the Japanese and the Chinese and the Saudis are going to retreat from the dollar over the next couple weeks. I think that probably we have a couple other things that are happening here. I mean, Florida, for all practical purposes, is in a housing recession. Not a full-scale recession, but with the housing meltdown, if you read every day, more and more mortgage companies and banks are going down the tubes. Some people say it's exaggerated, but I can tell you here there's about 40,000 homes and condos in South Florida in foreclosure. The real estate office and mortgage companies have closed. It's kind of a weird economy because unemployment is not that high. People are still spending money. People are starting to save. Consumer spending is strong, but the housing market is bad and our trade deficit is bad. Now, President Bush said Congress can do something about that trade deficit. I think in the end, even though the Chinese have been threatening us about the dollar and we've been making some, you know, kind of silly mistakes about, you know, the Dalai Lama and complaining about, you know, their food products and toys, which really aggravates the Chinese. I think the Chinese economy and our economy is so intertwined, we can't hurt each other. If one hurts the other, they're both hurt. So I think that if we can get through Iran, we can guarantee oil shipments to China. And if the Chinese don't pull the rug out from under us on the foreign reserve thing, we'll be okay.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back here. Our guest is John Quirk here on Radio Liberty. Well, John, before we go on, I just wanted you to get your web page out there so people would know, and so they may be able to get some of your fascinating emails and other material that you have put out.
Well, my email, that's the best way, is irgglobal@aol.com, and I'd be happy to answer as many emails as I can. I'm focusing over the next 2 months more and more on Iran. I deal with the Iranian opposition. I monitor a lot of the Iranian news stations and radio stations in Azerbaijan and Iran. And I talk to people in the different intelligence services, mainly British and French and Egyptian and Jordanian. And I have friends of mine in the CIA that are serving very bravely in Iraq. And everybody kind of has a different opinion and different take on things. I've even got some very good former KGB guys that don't like Putin that constantly warn me about the rise of Russia and that we shouldn't trust them, which is pretty evident. But I think that over the next few weeks, watch for things related to the dollar. Watch for things related to Russia and their effort to possibly negotiate with Tehran. I think the Iranians are going to try to spin us. And then, of course, the odd man out that we haven't talked about so much tonight is watch what happens with Israel. Israel is only going to take so much before they really start kicking us in the shins to do something, or before they try to do something with, I don't think Iran, I don't think they have the ability, but certainly Hezbollah in Syria. And then the positive thing, not to be all negative, the positive thing that could help a lot is if the Palestinians, when they come to Annapolis, they make some kind of general peace agreement or the beginnings of a peace agreement. I think that's going to happen. I think Bush really wants that. Condoleezza Rice is pushing for it. And that might help mollify the Israelis a little bit, maybe put the Syrians in their place. I don't think it'll do anything to Hezbollah or Iran, but at least it's a step in the right direction in that part of the Middle East for peace.
Well, I think it's going to be a fascinating time. I think the average American really doesn't understand the implications of what's going on in the Near East or the Middle East or how these things are going to impact upon our lives here. Well, our guest has been John Quirk. It's been a fascinating 2 hours, John, and I really do appreciate so much your being with us this evening and bringing us up to date on your view and with your connections of what's going on in those regions.
Okay, well, God bless you, Stan, and your viewers, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and as you know, we do talk to John and to our guests during the breaks, during the advertisements. So if you'd like to get the either 1 or 2 hour conversation with John Quirk tonight, who does have connections all throughout the world, we've certainly checked him out with our people in Washington, D.C. He's exactly what he says he is. Certainly has fascinating connections, and he feels very strongly that, of course, we are justified in going to war with Iran. But if you'd like to get, of course, his views, you'd like to hear our 2 hour tapes, or 1 hour tape, or CD, why, you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like my views, of course they are expressed in my newsletters, which are available at RadioLiberty.com. Probably one of the best summaries of how this hall fits together is something we had put together, a three pamphlet set called Foreknowledge 911. Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3. They're three separate pamphlets, and they're simply compilations of newsletters, but will give you a tremendous insight into things that you will never read elsewhere. The documentation is all there. They're not my opinion, but it's based upon the readily available facts that you will never hear discussed on ABC, CBS, or NBC. Well, let me simply point out, remind you once again, that October 28th, that we're having an all-day seminar at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and if you are interested in coming, we'd love to have you. Now, of course, if you're going to come, we have to have reservations because we're serving lunch. We're going to open the doors at 7:30, and of course, we'll go until 5 or 5:30. Be an opportunity to talk to the speakers, to ask questions, and hopefully you'll have a tremendous better insight into what's going on after attending this program. Anyway, if you're interested in coming, you're going to have a reservation. We'll need the reservations this week. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you are concerned about the things we're talking about and would like to make preparations for some very difficult times, because I believe we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis here in America. If you'd like an emergency catalog, emergency food catalog, and certainly to learn more about the various water filters and other things you would need, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a catalog free of charge, or if you're interested in, of course, health, we have a catalog, or we have just a regular catalog. It's of all of the books and videos and four tape sets and other material we carry. So certainly give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get any of the catalogs we're mentioning, or if you'd like to get a free newsletter, but of course you can always go up at RadioLiberty.com to our website. You can listen to our programs there on the Internet, and we are on 5 hours a day. You can certainly, you'll hear 4 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com and the other hours on AmericanNewsNet.com at 7 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. And then, of course, we have our videos up on our Internet site. We have our newsletters up there. And then we have all of the various things that you need to know, the books, to understand what's going on, what really energizes, what is taking place today, because, ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a spiritual battle. And behind everything, behind the secret societies in the West and the secret societies in the East, are the ancient mystery religions and their beliefs. And, of course, that's covered in my talk on the forbidden secret. And believe me, this is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years and hidden up until the present time. But it certainly was known to all the great thinkers and world leaders in the past. And this is how they obtained their great wealth and power, and how the people in the West are gaining their wealth and power today. They know the secret, and you can learn it, but we warn you against ever trying to implement it. Of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, and so please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle.